Syn Media acknowledges and pays respects to the people of the Woiwurrung and Boonwurrung language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nations, on whose unceded lands the Syn office stands. Syn and the Art Smitten team would like to further acknowledge the traditional custodians and their ancestors of the lands and waters across Australia where our content reaches. Art Smitten would like to expand that respect to Bunjil, the great creator ancestor of the Kulin Nations. Sovereignty has never been ceded. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Today we have Victoria Matheson and Silver Storm in the studio, two of the people behind 138 Gallery in Brunswick East. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
So just to kick it off, tell us about 138 Gallery. What makes 138 Gallery what it is? What goes on in this space?
I feel like to talk about 138 Gallery for what it is, it also is what it was. And it started in 2021, kind of during the lockdowns, with a couple of the people who are still with us now doing it. And they started it kind of as a way to connect to the community when they moved into the house, mm-hmm. which is the dwelling behind the gallery. And they were kind of connecting with local businesses and the broader community that were walking past every day. And I guess they also were surprised by how many people were also wanting the same thing, how many people wanted to show work. And it kind of just has grown from there. And it had been a window gallery from 2021 until the start of this year, which is when we decided to expand it into the space behind. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think we definitely have an interest in like contemporary sculptural spatial work, but it's really like across disciplines completely.
Mm. Yeah, and the window gallery still runs because it's sort of like the integral basis. It's where it started. And I think holding on to that as a space where particularly like currently studying or very emerging artists get like a lot of the people who show in our window space have never shown anywhere before. And it's really small, it's compact, and it's visible to the public at all hours. And so I think that accessibility factor, both as having the public who doesn't necessarily go out to see art come and see work. Like, we've had cute run-ins with like locals who are like, we come every Saturday to check what's in the window. Yeah, and then it's really accessible for first-time showing artists as well. But we opened our shop gallery at the start of this year, which is in the larger space. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a bit about?
Yeah, I feel like we kind of perceived for that space to be where we could experiment with more group shows, mm-hmm. because we had, you know, different applications for the window show that we just couldn't facilitate just due to the scale.
Yeah.
And we were really interested with how that would exist if it did get given the space that it sort of deserved, but also like again, the site specificity of where we are and what it means to be in that space, especially for the audience that we do have. Mm-hmm. And the shop gallery name sort of comes from that. Like, it isn't supposed to be decontextualized. It's very much like where it is. It looks like 138 Gallery. Like, we have the wooden paneling. We have, like, it looks like a shop front, and we want people to engage with that however they want to engage with that. Mm-hmm. And that makes it really exciting when work's created for that space.
Yeah, beautiful. And on the accessibility point, in terms of accessible to the public and accessible to kind of emerging artists to exhibit work for the first time, like, how do you structure that into the way things are run at 138 Gallery? How do you incorporate that?
I think one of the easiest or the most obvious ways that we felt that we could sort of address that was through our application process, where I guess conventionally, obviously, like a written application is going to be the easiest thing for the people who are kind of going through those applications and consuming them. But we also wanted to look at how do we open that up for people who can't or maybe don't feel like that's their strongest mode of communication. Mm. So we just initially were very much like, if people wanted to engage with us, you know, like verbally have a phone call, we could try to facilitate that, because more than it being about like an artist's resume, it was about their maybe the vision that they had for the show or like their experience as an artist more than in like a tertiary institution was sort of what we were kind of interested as well as like uncovering and seeing if that kind of approach did make a difference or if we were seeing, I don't know, more groups of people represented in that application body, I suppose.
And how do people respond to that kind of openness?
People still like to use the sort of original format for the most part. We've found people still tend to come through the application process. And I guess we take that into mind. I mean, we sort of try and show, like in the Shop Gallery for this year, we've tried to show a real range of artists, from people who are later in their career to people who are showing for the first time, from groups of artists to people who are specifically curating. But I think 3 weeks out of the month, we still have artists show in our window space. And I think we pretty much reserve that entirely for people who are showing for their first or second time. We don't ever show established artists in the window. They can come through the Shop space application process. And but yeah, we make sure that, that front space is kept for people who really need and would like that opportunity to show early in their career.
I think another part as well, it's like not so much as explicitly like quotas, but even across all of us who run the space, like we all represent different institutions or haven't gone to university, some of the people. And I think it's really important that we keep that diversity there and we don't end up being a gallery that's too closely affiliated with one university, or so it immediately gatekeeps that space from other people who maybe don't see themselves represented there or think they would be considered because they haven't gone to a certain place. And I think that's one of the other things, just on like really face value, that we want to veer away from as well.
Totally. And the diversity of the team and different kind of knowledges that the team bring. What are they? We got artist and writer and curator. What other kind of other roles and knowledge that the members of the 138 team bring?
We're pretty, like quite a range of different things. I mean, Theo is currently studying film. Uma's a support worker and a practicing artist. Clem's studying at the moment. And I am as well. So we've got a little bit of a range, but I would say we're quite artist run and, and we're all very young. So this is the first time that we're all trying something like this. And I think, you know, you've got a lot of energy and then a lot of things to learn through that process when it's not something that we've done before. I mean, Tori's got a little bit of skill set around like accessibility and trying to sort of make sure that spaces are open to and accessible for a wide range of people. And I have like sort of long-term experience running like arts events and working on projects, but at the same time, like running a gallery is like a whole other other thing.
Full on. What kind of steep learning curves did you run into entering the management side of things?
So many. Well, like everything, like it's run as a business. So we had to work out how to run a business and not in a format where we're trying to make money, but just like you need an ABN and you need to be tracking what money's coming in and out, and you need to make sure that there's enough financing from within. So we all contribute as well as like what little we get through the artists. To make sure that we can buy enough paint for the next month and, you know, patch the walls. And so we've sort of, thankfully, I think the, like some of the systems were set up through running that smaller space, which I think that was like, if we just tried to go and start a large space gallery from scratch, it would have been really tricky, but still like every new show, every new month, we're like, oh, we've got to learn about this thing.
Totally. And I think the financial obstacle is definitely one that we like constantly run into. Like it's always been like non-for-profit, out of pocket, like everything comes from us. And we've, again, it comes down to being time poor and everyone doing so many different things, but all equally coming together, wanting to do this, like the time that actually is involved with organizing grant applications and things like that. I think we both constantly are just like feeling so overwhelmed by, but again, it's just like we give the gallery everything we can energetically and it's working in the way that it is because everyone who contributes to it cares about it so much. And I think as well, like, you're so right, we do just learn everything like along the way, like we run into like an obstacle and we learn something that we will, you know, inevitably be able to use the next time, and then we'll also obviously run into another obstacle at that kind of corner. So it just is this like a rolling wheel of learning.
We're so lucky, I think, as well. Like Tori and I have definitely a similar skill set in terms of like the organization, administration, artist liaison, all of that stuff. But having Luca, Clem and Theo come back on, who'd originally started the window space, they had like installation skill set and built the wall and okay. like did the lighting and things that like is not in our wheelhouse. And so that we were like, wow, this is amazing. You can build a wall. and so that I think having that like quite wide range of skills from the team really helps, that at least someone is going to know how to yeah. do the thing that it needs to be done. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that makes sense. And in terms of the physical space, so some other members started the shopfront window, and were you always living, like, how did the actual physical space come to be the gallery?
So when Luca DiClario, Clement Lazzaro and Theo Strader lived there originally in 2021,
mm-hmm.
they were, how did, like, you know, trying to figure out what they wanted to do with that space. They were all really interested in art, and they, you know, again, wanted to connect with like the neighbors, the local community, and figured that the best way to do that would be through starting this
mm-hmm.
window gallery. And my understanding is that Theo sort of was manning the wall building initially with the window gallery,
mm-hmm.
and it worked really well for them. They were really enjoying it. But then when they moved out, were just figuring out if they wanted to leave it behind or not. And when I moved into the shop, the house, the building that it is, we're having a similar conversation about whether or not they leave that behind, and we would have wanted to do something similar anyway, and they were just really excited that we wanted to carry it on. So we kind of continued doing it that way. And then it was sort of really in order to make the space behind it what it was. It was like a lot of work, but also no work at all. It's like essentially you're creating an empty space, but at the same time there's, you know, pretty significant changes that need to be made. Again, none of us knew how easy or difficult that would be. But I guess it's one of those things that it all did just come together, and then looking after it as it goes is a much easier task than putting it together to begin with.
Mm.
But, yeah, I think some of that, I guess, outsourcing a lot of support where you need it is maybe where we can extend the most, like, gratitude to, even just, like, at the Alderman, like, being able to borrow a ladder, like, things like that were really, actually really, really helpful.
Beautiful.
Yeah. We are in a very good community-centric area, I think, of Brunswick East. It really shows in the way, I mean, even just talking with you about what you're hoping the gallery will be for the community, I think you produce that by, dare I say, manifesting it in the way that you create the space as well. It's really clear.
Kind of talking about the different spaces in the gallery, the shop front window versus the shop gallery, is that the two spaces? Yeah. Could you tell us a bit about how the gallery plays with the idea of private and public art in that space division and in the window shop front?
Yeah, I feel like the window gallery has just always been like inherently super public. And as Sylph mentioned, like it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week show for an artist when they show in there.
Mm.
But it's also quite impersonal as well when there's, you know, not a face behind the work, or there's not a conversation that can be had, or at least facilitated by somebody if you're interested in it. But it is also like super public, again, to a very specific kind of like leg of our community. And then the shop gallery kind of created a very like new and exciting opportunity to be engaging with our audience and have them be able to come in off the street and have that conversation and kind of ask what we're doing and be able to engage in a really open way that we were really excited about. And we've definitely noticed it a lot with at least local families. And when we had our first show in that space, a neighbor and his daughter came in, and she was looking around and she's going, "This isn't art," like all of these like quite abstract sculptural works. And he was just asking her, "Well, what is art?" And there was this really beautiful conversation that was sort of unfolding. And then she came back in with Eugene, who runs the Alderman. They gave the daughter a Polaroid camera, and she came in and starts like taking Polaroid photographs of the art. And then I put them up on the wall in the gallery, which sort of extended the exhibition in this other sort of way. And I think it's just really interesting playing with the openness of those spaces and inviting in different people who, again, like Sylph also mentioned, like might not traditionally go out of their way to be seeing art in this sort of environment.
Yeah, every opening we've had, I've had at least like a couple of people come up to me and be like, "I live around the corner. What is this? Like, what's going on here? Like, what is this space?" And so I think that allows people to come through who, yeah, are from the community, but, yeah, also wouldn't be exposed to it. And I think
that's the really exciting bit when you've got the cross-section of that. And then obviously having the internal space where we can hold events and people can visit means that we get a wider community of artists able to come and visit. And we know what that looks like because with the window space, we had no idea how many people come to see it. And so I think just in terms of running it, it can be on both ends. It's really fulfilling, but getting to actually meet the artists that we're working with and have their families and their friends and, you know, have a bit of celebration of the work is, that's really nice for us, having worked sort of more remotely for quite a few years.
Mm. Yeah, facilitates sort of stumbling across it, which is really cool. What previous exhibitions do you think have played with the space specifically in kind of an interesting way, or played with kind of being separated by the glass? Do any come to mind?
That artist who was working with that sort of like makeup and the ideas of the mirror, I can't remember her name, which is terrible, but I remember that you quite loved her work, Tori, and she was sort of playing with this sort of like the mirror and the internal, and I think that that offers a lot. Like, we've got a couple of shows coming up that I'm quite excited about, and one is like essentially a wall of breasts painted by an artist called Ruth O'Leary, who is actually a teacher at RMIT, and she was just like, what happens when you put the private in public space, you know, in a space where it's not sort of like usually accessed. And again, we've got another artist who hopefully we'll show at the end of this year, who wanted to make a work that was sort of interactive with the building, and they wanted to make sculptural pieces based on the awning of our actual building and insert them inside the window. And so I think playing with that sort of external space that like the window offers, this ability to play with like the street so evidently.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember as well, I Don't Want to Fall in Love on the Internet, I think is one you did with lots of like fabric work, just like, and the glass in front really blocked your urge to want to feel and touch everything. And there was an intimacy but a distance. It was really awesome.
It's Hannah Hall's textile work. Yeah. It's kind of stretched over canvases.
Yeah.
And I think she like hand dyes them as well. They're really beautiful.
Yeah. And it definitely is a different experience. Like, as an artist, when I go to a gallery, I'm always like 5 centimeters in front of the artwork, trying to see how it's made and trying to see how it's been stretched.
And yeah, you're like on the wall on the side.
And so it does definitely put that sort of distance having the glass there. But also I think encourages like an installation feel on what often would be sort of more 2D works. Like often we've had the paintings hanging off the wall or had things hanging in the window. And because it's so small, it really, I think in wider space, some of those works wouldn't look sort of so encapsulated and obviously in space. And so, you know, we've had different artists funnel through our shop applications and our window applications. And I guess we really love when someone has considered their work and then considered the space specifically and how it will work in either one, rather than being like, this is a smaller and a larger space. You know, we've had quite a few that are like, the window would work incredibly, or I've got something that sort of interacts with the functions of this larger space and the tonality of it not being like a white cube.
On that, what other spaces in the community in NAM do you feel like are working to dissolve the kind of public-private or the crowds and the type of people and the accessibility and the white cube nature of the gallery? What kind of other art spaces do you admire at the moment?
I'm a little bit obsessed with Green Floor. We were chatting about them just before, and they've got quite a similar format because it's a shop front as well. And so when you go down, it's on Johnson Street. When you're walking down Johnson Street, it's lit up at night. And so you get to have this quite intimate and personal experience with the work from outside of the gallery in the evening. I walked past, I'm not sure who the artist was, but they had this like great
like airbrushed dogs and like really, really.
I think that was rough, was the exhibition.
Rough, yeah. And cool. I was just like, it was just like glowing in the night. I was like, I found some art. But I also think that it seems as though their ethos is really collaborative and is encouraging emerging artists to engage with spaces and curate. And yeah.
They're good, I think, for both of you as well. This idea that, like, I mean, obviously you're all practicing and working and trying to run this gallery space. And so thinking of, like, interesting ways that you can still have art be accessible on days when you can't physically be in the space, I think is really great. That's something about Green Floor do as well. I think they're only really open 3 days a week.
Mm.
And so, yeah, capitalizing on that nighttime or even daytime window display, I think, is really good. I'm interested as well in, I think you guys get like a lot of sunlight streaming in through those windows. Do you consider that when you have specifically your window shows, like shadows, and also if they're streaming onto paintings, do you think about how that affects them?
We definitely run into that. About like, must be like actually almost 2 years ago now, but when we were doing some of the window shows, it gets really hot in there in summer, and we hadn't really anticipated how that would interact with work. And there was one particular show I remember, and it was like a furniture show. Like it was, I think it was Sean Brickhill, and he'd made all this really beautiful furniture and had basically put in this, there's like an umbrella stand, but he put all of these beautiful, like kind of green leaves or whatever inside of it for the display. And it looked amazing.
Mm.
And within 3 days, they'd like perished in the window. But then also the wood had started to like move in the heat in the window. And it was just when we first maybe kind of realized that interaction or other works. There was another one that was like a wax work that we, again, at this point informed the artist may melt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they seem quite excited by the prospect of that happening and how that could change the show. But it's definitely something that we'd like come to acknowledge just to mitigate any of those risks, because it is definitely a thing, especially in photography, like pages curling. And obviously maybe something for down the line for us to consider financially is like something to invest in to prevent such, I guess it's not even necessarily damage, it's just influence from outside, but it's
I think even just informing people beforehand.
Oh, it's on that form now. So you're like, you have to know this is a possibility. Yeah. There's like possible light damage, and
you wouldn't want to lose the beautiful light, though. I think
I think a
big part of it.
Like one of our works in the show that we've got on at the moment is a glass work, and I haven't been in to see it at that time when the light comes through, but just that like mirroring of the sun through the window, then onto this glass work, and being able to play with the light, and it's like it's not something that. I mean, like, as a painter, like, it always makes me so sad when you go into gallery spaces and you see works that were probably painted in natural light then shown in a white cube. And so, actually, I guess, like, every sort of sometimes downfall of the space, like the fact that we've got panelling that we can't drill into, but at the same time we've made that part of what the space is and a point of difference that's, like, why we encourage artists and having the larger space has been exciting, so we can encourage people to make work for the space specifically.
It brings your wood paneling it's very nostalgic. It makes me feel like I'm in your house, and also that I'm in like my childhood house as well, I think. And I love a concrete floor. I think your exposed floors are really great and you can get a bit messy with it, like with the show that you've got on at the moment as well.
So I was wondering if we could now talk about the current exhibition, which opened on Saturday, I believe, and is closing on the 28th, called Aperitif.
Yeah, so the artists for this show are Georgia Norton, Hannah Barry, Olivia Wood and Shannon Toth. And they've made some really incredible work. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily site-specific, but it feels site interactive. They were very considered in the way that their sort of installation works engaged with the space, and it's all like almost ephemeral. They're using a lot of foodstuffs. There's a lot of sort of like inclination towards thoughts of the body,
And this sort of, like, the show is called Aperitif, so it's sort of this, like, consumptible, like, what happens when you work with materials that you are able to consume, and you make works that probably don't have a second life after this show, but at the same time, they're sort of quite magical because you can't quite work out what anything's made of. So one of the works is like actually a giant marshmallow. Another work is two mandarins made out of jelly. Georgia's work is sort of, she's used Cheetos and tulips. And so it's sort of like I had people coming in who don't have sort of a real necessary interest in the arts, who was so engaged with, like, what is it? Like, the materiality was really exciting for people, I think, whether or not they had, like, an interest in viewing art, whether they were there to just, like, catch up with their friend or whatever. Like, everyone was like, oh, is that made out of food?
Is that going from a Cheeto?
Yeah. And I just love that thing when you get to see someone who isn't necessarily interested in art get really excited about it for a minute, because it makes it, again, coming back to that thing of accessibility, it's like art is for everybody and there's like an avenue for everybody to access it. And it felt like this show really sort of highlighted that thing and made it for everybody.
And what about the practical side of working with materials, organic materials like that? Do you think that time will have an impact on how the show presents and how the marshmallow will fare over the 10 days?
We were just discussing this. We don't know, but we're happy to sort of see where it turns. The works won't be sort of necessarily replenished. I think the marshmallow may possibly be touched up through the week with a little extra icing sugar. But I think they're sort of committed to the possible, like, disintegration of the works as the week goes on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were talking about how this is your first application-based show. And I was wondering what that process was like and how you came to the idea of Aperitif. Did it start as the original concept or based on who applied? How did that all work?
Yeah, so they applied with the show essentially curated. So with that sort of format, the name, et cetera, and examples of their past work. Obviously, the works weren't made yet because they were made specifically for the show. But we sort of encourage like an artist-led curation process because I think they know, I mean, we sometimes have ideas about the way that things are, and it really depends on the artists themselves and how many times they've shown work. I think this collective have shown together before. They're graduated students, so they've had a grad show and they've had, you know, their first couple of shows, and so they sort of know what they were doing. But some artists will come in and we're like, have you thought about approaching it this way? And so, yeah, it really depends. But most of the shows that we've got this year are solo or group shows, and the artists are sort of making the decisions about the curation of the show and in the space.
Did you have many applications from curators with a group of artists, or is it all kind of artist-led?
Yeah, I think there's a surprising number of curators or group shows that were, like, curated in their applications. Like, I think more than we were anticipating, for sure, but it was exciting because that was something we were hoping for. Yeah. And I guess it's hard to necessarily target that audience, because a lot of it as well is, like, people who are artists who are first-time curators and they want to kind of try that out, but also you could sense some people's anxiety with trying that out. And also, if, you know, we had only a certain amount of shows available and you want to be able to feel confident giving somebody that opportunity, that's probably actually the hardest part about deciding.
Always is.
Yeah. It's really tricky. Yeah, our next show is being curated by Jessie Deng, and I think the format for that is they applied with their concept it's going to be, I can't remember exactly what the name of the show is, but he's sort of playing with, like, humor and the joke, and so he had proposed artists and then is in the process of finalizing the artists that will be in the show, and will sort of, like, curate that himself, and we're just there to support that process. And yeah, it was really lovely to like meet him on Saturday, and he was telling me a funny story about how he'd like asked some different friends of his like to show as part of the show, and they were like, my work's not funny, like you can't, I don't want to be included. But so this will be a bit of a different format to that sort of like artist-led curation that we've had in this month. But because it's also new, it's also like each month feels like it'll be a bit of a different learning curve. Like when we have our first solo show, we've left those till later in the year because we're like, we want them to be able to fill the space and have enough time and for them to feel like they're supported enough by us. Whereas when there's, you know, six artists showing one work each, you know, they're able to sort of lead that process a little easier themselves.
Yeah.
And in terms of the first kind of attempt at the application-based process of a group show, what did you learn in that? How did you navigate sifting through them and figuring out who to platform and who to not, or how to sustainably sort of reject, as we were talking a bit about yesterday?
Yeah, I feel like, if anything, that's where the accessibility comes into it all the more. Like, I have a little bit of a background in, like, community development communications and specifically, like, programs that required application-based sort of assessment and the way that you go about that. And I think as well, like, as much as we're all really interested in art and have, like, very different backgrounds and interests in art, none of us is sitting there and, you know, deciding who's worthwhile, who's not worthwhile, every single person who applied, you know, like, put an effort and time into their applications. And we were, like, we felt so lucky that it was, so many strong applications. And I think that what we can do, though, is look at it and go, how do we, like, have a really balanced representation? And all discussing what that means and all of us sitting around together and like looking at those and giving all those applications time. I think if anything, we just didn't realize how many applications and therefore how much time it would take. And that kind of sets everything back a little bit, and you feel yourself like, you know, picking up the pieces that goes a bit because you want to give every single thing the time that it deserves. But yeah, I feel like that was a big part. It was looking at different demographics and making sure that we are seeing so many different communities of people represented in our lineup for the rest of the year, for sure.
Yeah, and I think in terms of anyone ever being interested in applying for a show, we are happy to be super transparent about what that process looks like and what maybe a good application looks like. I mean, it's easier to find us in person when we're sitting in the shop or at an opening because we can be slow on the emails, but we're really happy to say, like, you know, it's really like having a visual portion to an application. I mean, we were learning all of this through the process of accepting them. Like when you have no idea what somebody's work is going to look like or how it might interact with the space, it's really hard to sort of like have the go ahead on something like that. Whereas when someone's given you as much information as they possibly can and has really thought about how it's going to work in the space, it's a lot easier for us to imagine what that show is going to be like. But yeah, I think we definitely happily share any pointers with anyone who is interested in showing or applying to our next year's round about what would work well in their application.
I also think I mentioned before, but we as well, like where possible, do want to really facilitate alternative modes of application. And like I've done like phone call applications with people where it's more or less just trying to have a conversation where we just reach like a mutual understanding of what it is that they want to do. And it's as much about us being able to figure out if we can help support them execute that as much, you know, as thinking about their idea as its own thing. It's also about figuring out, is it right for the space and are we able to adequately support them with what they're trying to do? So I think as well, like really want people to consider other ways of engaging with us beyond our sort of like internet face.
I think this idea of giving feedback is really, really important, especially when you're coming up through, like, I feel like there's a larger amount of young people around our age at the moment who are coming out of uni and really want to show work. And it's very hard to go through so many of these application processes and not know what you've done wrong. And I think just facilitating that feedback is really great.
I mean, as a like an emerging artist myself, like I was like, this is like a gold mine of like wealth of knowledge about when it's really easy to see what a show might be like and when it's really tricky too. And yeah, I think, you know, we're definitely happy to like share those insights because we're learning in that process as well. Like we're not
we don't know what a good application looks like because they are so varied, but we're learning what's easy to envision.
Mm.
Yeah.
And also just not have like a dead end kind of process where someone applies and like doesn't get accepted and then doesn't feel like they can visit the gallery or engage with us or reapply or have that kind of open dialogue, because we want to be like generating like a super open arts community. Like, it's not supposed to be you're either affiliated with the gallery or you're not, or you tried to be and you like, you know, weren't. And it was really exciting when we had our first shop gallery opening to see our outreach on Instagram, at least, for how many people were there and had been kind of just engaging from afar, but actually putting like a name to a face for so many people, or people have been following and liking and like messaging us, and having them turn up in person was like a really exciting experience. And I think we just want to grow that rather than shrink that through the process of applications. Like, I think it's supposed to feel like, yeah, it's probably.
Yeah, I think the worst part about rejection from applications is that sometimes it just feels so embarrassing that you don't want to, you might never get to open that door again and talk to those people. But if you are facilitating that back and forth, then yeah, you can come in and say hi and see what's going on, see the shows that did get accepted and find out why as well. I think that's important. Yeah. That's really good.
Tori was very specific about when we were writing our rejection letter, and like, it was amazingly led by her, because she was like, we have to say, please apply again. You know, like, this isn't the end of the road, and gave like, you know, options for different galleries that they could go look at and an option for feedback, which we've still got to get to because we're super time poor, but you know, get back to those people. And I think just trying to keep that door open and be like, come in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're super welcome here. And, you know, that it was also really competitive. Like, we got something like 40 applications and we had 12 slots for this year. So we weren't expecting that. And, you know, it definitely made it harder to choose, but also for, everyone applying, it was definitely trickier to get a slot in the gallery this year.
Yeah. Well, you can just be excited for next year as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
That's great. What kind of work do you feel you've picked up on with this application process? Is there a common thread between the ones that you did choose, or is it just more, I mean, you've been talking a bit about applications that focus on site, and clearly you're quite keen on contemporary installation work, but do you think, I mean, were there any kind of surprises that you found? You're a group of eight, so I guess it must have been hard to all come to a decision, but yeah, just curious about whether there's any kind of common thread between the 12 shows that you've got.
I think it's really varied.
Yeah.
And I think that was our sort of intention. I think as a group of eight, there were a few shows that we could all definitely agree on.
Mm.
And then we all had different opinions about why we loved other ones.
Any big debates?
No, not massively. Like, it was actually, it felt quite, I think just because like a lot of the reason that like some of the applications that didn't get accepted, often it was just that we didn't have enough information to go on. And so it was, but I think like we've got at one end someone called Eilish showing later this year, and I think they're going to have like tattoo dildos and like paintings, and, you know, and at the other end we've got Sandra Flores, who makes these sort of like kid-friendly installation spaces, and she's a mom, and she like brought her cute dog to come meet me when they visited the space, and like, you know, everyone in between that, like, you know, young people and old people and students. And I think that was the thing that, you know, we tried to keep considering when we did that process. But yeah, definitely, I mean, it took us like 6 hours of sitting around a table at the Alderman being like, how are we going to choose?
Totally. That was like just the deliberation, like not even the hours that we all spent going through the applications individually, only to then come back together and discuss them for that long. Like, it was a huge amount of time.
Mm-hmm. And what do you love about the current show? What do you love about what you've chosen?
Mm.
I think I love the way that it works in the space. Like, I think the first couple of shows we curated ourselves, and we put them together quite quickly, and they were wonderful. They were really exciting. But I think getting to show work that's been considered as a unit and has been curated by people who know the work really intimately, like who know each other's work really intimately,
I think that consideration is really obvious in the showing. It all speaks to each other really clearly. There's sort of an experiential process engaging with the work. And yeah, I don't know. I was just when the show, because I wasn't part of the install, and when I came in on the last day, and Shannon was like blow torching the marshmallow, which smelled like marshmallows. It was like marshmallows on the fire, and I was just like, this is so exciting. This is why we, like, you know, some days we're like, I'm so tired and like, this is a lot of work and juggling, and then other days you're like, this is why we're doing it. It's really cool and exciting and, you know, an opportunity, and yeah.
So special.
The colours look really good as well, I think. Just back on the wood thing again. I love that wood palette.
We love
so
wood.
Great. Yeah.
Because Sin is a youth radio show, we like to make sure we have a bit of a segment where professionals or people who are passionate get to offer a bit of advice or words of wisdom or knowledge sharing of steep learning curves, as discussed before. And so I was thinking maybe we could start with Silva about your experience as an artist and how you have found art school and what you would, whether you would recommend it to some young people that are maybe
a loaded question.
Yeah. a lot to unpack.
Maybe about like your come up from exiting high school and entering, and you said you're studying at RMIT for the last little while, and what your experience is there.
Yeah, yeah, I've had a pretty all over the shop career and study process. Like, I'm still studying, but I'm also like a full-time practicing artist, I would say. I obviously liked art in high school, but I started off with these really like sort of slapdash shows called Modus that I used to run, like a one night art show that I'd curate and then put my own work in. Cool. And I did maybe four or five of those when I was about 18. So that was like a nice sort of like toe in to sort of test out the process of curating and artist liaising.
Where did you host those?
So at the time I had an auntie who had a back room of a shop. Nice. And I used to just like give her $100 or use it for the night and just do, I think the one night format worked really well.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but it means that you don't need to hire a space extensively, and you can often find spaces to run it in. I did one in another space that was just also like a rent by the day art space. And I did one in like a friend's backyard and house. And yeah, they were very sort of like thrown together, but it was a nice way to sort of start that process of making. And then, and I took 2 years off and then started my degree. And then COVID started. And I think through that time, I mean, I'm really lucky. I've got sort of like a wider arts community of practicing artists of all ages, because my parents' friends and aunts and uncles are sort of involved in the arts. So I've always sort of been thrown into like, do you want to like be on a photo shoot for this like show that we're doing, or like try this thing out or do that thing? And I've always just sort of said yes to like all of the different things. So I've dipped my toe into like a little bit of theatre and a little bit of like photography and fashion and whatever. And then I started studying, and COVID hit, and I stopped for 2 years because it was just not working.
Real, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I think it was anyone who plugged through that time, like, good on them. And then I came back last year to do like half of a year that I had to finish after sort of 2 years off being a like professional tattoo artist as like the predominant amount of my practice, and then also practicing sort of visual arts on the side of that. And then last year I did an internship with AFIDS, who are a performing arts group, and they did a work for Rising, and then they ended up getting me to come to the iteration that they did in Leeds in the UK. So that was like an amazing opportunity. And again, it was just like chasing people down and being like, hi, can I work for you? Like, you're really cool. This is amazing. And then I had a residency in France at the end of last year. And then I've come back to finish my degree. So it's sort of been a little bit everywhere. Also volunteered at ACCA. I feel like my advice is just like ask for what you want. Like, the arts is hard and you've got to work hard, but you just chase down the person whose thing you're interested in, ask the people who are running the RE near you if you can help, if you can get involved. Like, I've always been interested in like community spaces and learning, and I think the way that you get it is just by asking and asking and asking again, and if someone says no, then ask someone else, and like that's the only way that you sort of can get anywhere forward, because no one will come and deliver a career to you, but you also don't need to wait to get discovered or found as an artist. Like, all of the opportunities are there, you just need to put in 500 applications and maybe not even that many, just ask the person who like knows how to write a really good grant to help you. You know, the community's there, and it's so useful. And in my experience, everyone's just like gorgeous and willing to help and teach and hold space for you.
Do you feel like that experience of away from like the academy and like learning art in that traditional kind of format changed your approach to how you entered studying? Like, do you think that already having your experience of curating and presenting for those one days, how did that change your approach, do you think?
Yeah, I think just the age factor, like it's crazy that you go and study at 18.
Yeah.
Like, every time I've come back to studying, I'm like, I'm more mature and I know what I want to be doing. And I think
it's more useful.
It's more useful, and you know who you are. And I think actually, like, I study at RMIT, and it's not super structured. The tutors there are super loose. They're super willing to like work with you on trying all sorts of stuff out. But I struggled with just not knowing what I wanted to try or like what sort of my artistic language was yet. And so I think with that thing comes like a lot of self-doubt. And so taking that time and just like letting it sit and coming back to it got me to a spot where I was like, okay, great, I know who I am, I know what I want to be doing and who I want to be working with, and studying in that, with that sort of framework, is so much easier than using as a place to like test things out, and then, you know, that's what they want you to do, and so you sort of like have all of this discovery. But at the same time, I think, you know, the arts are plagued with like self-doubt and like it's a really tricky thing to negotiate, and like, you know, sometimes school is really good for that because you've got your mentors, and sometimes taking space from it's really good because you get to like find your way to the stuff that's really interesting to you.
Absolutely. What was the residency in France like?
It was like a weird, wild dream. I stayed in like a chateau with 21 other artists in like the Champagne region, and I got to paint for 28 days and eat like heaps of bechamel and cheese for breakfast. And it was pretty epic. It was like a weird dream, but also so funny. Like, there's always politics and people when you're sharing space, and like, you know, that's hilarious. But it was pretty special. Like, I felt very lucky to have the opportunity.
How did you so the Leeds thing was separate. This is a residency. Did you apply for that residency?
Yeah. It's just called Chateau au Quaveau, and it's a paid residency. So it's like mostly Australians and Americans, because that's who's like excited to go to France, whereas people from within Europe are like, I'm not paying to go to France.
Somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. It was by application, and I think they just get more and more. So it's like you just keep applying, and as far as they were saying, like, the quantity of people, I imagine it's probably going to be similar in our gallery. The quantity of people applying only gets bigger, so the sooner you get in and, like, have a go, probably the better.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then over to you, Victoria. Just for people wanting to get involved in arts management, what kind of advice would you offer to them?
I think it's, like, all about being brave with an idea. Like, you're never gonna necessarily be like 100% sure that it's gonna work, but you do have to, you know, really believe in it and really want it. And I think starting with something tangible that you know, and I think that both for Clem and Luca and Theo when they started it, and me when I moved into the place, like, just starting with the window gallery and being able to, you know, like, hold that in your hands and like feel it out and just work with one really contained space and even one artist at a time. Like, a lot of those spaces are solo shows, and you just learn each show and something gets a little bit bigger, and then you can kind of see the possibilities that are there. And then also, as soon as you know, you are ready to make that next step. Like, again, you're never going to be 100% sure, but it's about, like Silver saying, really, like, asking for help and, like, figuring out who you want to speak to and what you want it to be. And it's never going to fall into your lap. Like, it takes so much hard work and so much time, but it, like, definitely pays off, and you'll inevitably find, like, the right person if you ask enough people. And I think a big part of it's, like, shared philosophy as well. Like, you want to be working alongside people who, like, really share your vision. And not get lost in that.
Do you feel like you went into 138 Gallery with the vision, or has it kind of developed over time as the team's built?
I think it definitely has developed. Like, it definitely started with even just wanting to connect with community, and art was the means of doing it, whereas now it's about the art and how that can, like, enrich the community beyond it. And I think as well, like, being in the space and falling in love with the house and falling in love with Brunswick East and, like, all of the people who are there, and what it means to everyone and what it means to me and what it means to everyone who's even lived there, like, all of our connection to that just grew and grew and grew, and the possibilities grew and grew and grew. I think that's, like, a big part of it for sure.
Absolutely. And for people wanting to reach out to 138 Gallery, how would they go about this?
They should DM us on Instagram or email us at 138gallery@gmail.com. We're as responsive as we can possibly be, which sometimes isn't very, but we will, like, endeavour to get back to everybody. But we are super, just, like, even questions, conversations, like, we want to hear from people.
And come to our openings if you want to have a conversation about showing or about curating or about running your own space. We are best in person because we can have a really easy conversation, and it may be hard to tell who's who, but whoever's working the bar is probably related to the gallery,
totally.
And you can get them to point you to someone to talk to.
And everyone's so friendly.
Everyone's so friendly. But yeah, we're always happy. We're always happy to organise meetings while we're sitting in the space, or to have people come and ask questions about what we're doing.
138 Lygon Street.
Right? 138 Lygon Street, Brunswick East.
And what openings do you have coming up? What exhibitions are on the radar?
So our next shop exhibition is curated by Jessie Deng, and that one's called Taxonomy of a Joke. The opening details will be on our Instagram over the next coming weeks. And then in our window gallery, we have Alana Baxter and then Julia Schmidt showing this month. And then during July, we've got Ruth and Bruce O'Leary showing, and we have Yolanda showing, and then we are actually loaning the space to a Refugee Women in Business initiative who will be curating their own show for a couple of days there doing something we have no idea what, but we're like, have it. Do something. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it will be really interesting to see. They're all the encouragement, I think, from the people running that one is that it's all first time or people who've never made art before. So they're going to have a big group show. And I think it will be like kids and dogs and, you know, cute community vibes, but from all across Melbourne.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned some artists coming up for the window display, but what kind of work, what format?
Yeah. Alana Baxter is doing sort of wooden installation work, so they'll be quite interesting, like, I think, playing with the sort of 3D aspect of that space. And Julia Schmidt is doing a series of charcoal drawings that they made after a visit to Japan, so they'll be sort of like quite simple and beautiful. And Ruth is the artist who's doing lots of boobs in the window. Yeah.
Keen to check it out. Just want to say from both of us, thank you so much for coming
thank
in.
You so
it's
much.
Been a really great chat with you guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's wonderful. And just to reiterate, if you're keen to see what's on at 138 for the rest of the year, you can visit the space at 138 Lygon Street in Brunswick East. You can follow them on Instagram at 138 Gallery and hit up their website as well at 138gallery.com.